Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Crime Solvers. This is your host, John Hagedorn. And now, the adventures of Sam Spade. Enjoy.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Detective Agency.
They offered me a cool $1.5 million, but I couldn't be bought.
Oh, Sam, all the time fooling.
Straight goods, Evie.
Oh, really, Sam? Why didn't you take it? Oh, but you couldn't, of course.
That's right, Angel. Taxes.
Oh, you mean it would put you in a bracket?
The girl's name, in case you were going to ask, was Sugar Cane.
Was she sweet?
Oh, Effie, you made a joke.
Oh, not much of one, though.
That is true. But even though you do seem to be, as you would say, in a jugular vein, I shall be right down, serious and frowning, to dictate a chronicle steeped in the bitter tea of general confusion, brewed in a witch's cauldron of murder, greed, and avarice. That's what gives it that nutty flavor.
What, Sam?
Silly girl, I refer to the sugar cane caper, on which I will forthwith my report be down to dictate on, with, goodbye.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. Want to look better on the job? Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Want to look better to that gal of yours? Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic improves your entire appearance by grooming your hair neatly and naturally, relieving dryness, removing loose dandruff. If your family hasn't yet enjoyed the benefits of America's leading hair tonic, here's what to do about it. Ask at your drug or toilet goods counter for the new 25-cent Get Acquainted bottle of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Hello, Sam. How are you, Sam?
Hmm?
You were so lugubrious over the phone. Sometimes you're so bucolic, but tonight...
What am I? When?
Lugubrious tonight. Just bubbling over.
Do you possibly mean I'm being lush with my verbiage?
There, you see?
Well, that's because I've been at work in the environs of Snob Hill, where they never use one word if 12 will do. Are you ready for the dictation, I guess it is? I plan to be most amusing tonight. Already I am, yet. Look, I haven't even started.
Oh.
Really, I haven't. All right. Now... Pencil. Date. Alan should have such an audience. Date. October 3rd, 1948, to Clifton Cavanaugh, Esquire. Down, Effie. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the sugar cane caper. On Thursday last, at 11 a.m., as I waited for the traffic signal so that I might legally cross Powell Street in order to board a cable car, a cat rubbed up against my leg. I leaned over to stroke it and noticed that it had six toes. I wondered if that meant anything. It didn't. Most Snob Hill addresses don't mean much anymore, but yours still does. The house was big, hideous, and reassuring.
Oh. Are you from Pfeffer Snow?
No, I'm in business for myself. Mr. Cavanaugh in?
Oh. Well, come on in. I can't understand what happened to that boy from Pfeffer Snow. Oh, pardon me if I seem a little hungover.
Gladly, but can you ever forgive yourself?
I like you. You got a sense of humor. You'll need it.
You trying to tell me you don't approve of Mr. Cavanaugh?
That perfume pothead.
What did he do to you?
He married my mother.
Oh, stepfather?
Yeah. No, I'm Fred Blair.
Spade's my name. Where do I find him?
Detective?
Check.
I'll give you a clue. Look behind you.
I did. I turned and found myself looking straight into your handsome face. You look several years younger than your stepson, with regular aquiline features, dark, widely spaced eyes, and blue-black hair.
Well, so you're the notorious Sam Spade.
Well, I don't want to seem modest.
Come into the conservatory. There's just the barest chance that we'll not be overheard.
Good.
There. Sit down.
What's your problem, Mr. Cavanaugh?
Problem indeed. Problems, plural. Starting with that junior grade lush that collared you at the door.
He's very fond of you, too.
Well, you can't imagine what a trial that boy's been to me. Both the children. For some reason, neither Fred nor his sister Eunice ever quite accepted me as their father.
You don't say.
I suppose my youth counted against me. I think they misinterpreted my motives. When any man marries a wealthy widow twice his age...
Yeah, why did you send for me, Mr. Cavanaugh?
Well, it all started several months back, before my wife, their mother, died. The scandal quite literally killed her.
You're sure that's what did the trick?
Fred, who, among other talents, was a positive genius for knowing the wrong sort of people, struck up an acquaintance with a hoodlum named Johnny Verona.
Nice, clean-cut gangster type, runs a joint on Pacific Street.
Precisely. With the positively hysterical name of the Subtropico.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a sordid brawl of some sort. A man shot. Obviously, this Johnny Verona shot him. Fred had to give testimony before the grand jury. It was all we could do to keep it out of the paper.
But you did.
No. And old Eleanor, my wife, that is, dropped dead when the butler brought in the Chronicle. But the worst was yet to come, Sam.
Well, don't keep me hanging, Cliff.
Well, Fred continued to frequent this bistro, this dive of Verona's.
I understand.
I believe the bait is a toothsome little teaser with the unlikely name of Sugar Cane.
She likes Fred.
No woman in her right mind would look twice at that idiot, even if he were twice as rich and only half a sodden. Then, where was I? Oh, yes, this Verona person came here several times on the pretext of pouring Fred through the front door and thereby met my stepdaughter, Eunice.
Well, that's a very interesting story, Mr. Cavanaugh. Now, maybe you'll tell me what you want a detective for.
Because my stepdaughter has brazenly informed me that she intends to marry this gangster. I want you to help me prevent that marriage.
I don't see.
Don't see what?
I don't see how I can.
Well, perhaps I didn't make myself clear. When Verona was arrested for that shooting in his club, Fred didn't tell the grand jury all he knew. Now, if you could prove that Verona is guilty, then we'd be rid of him for good.
Is it Verona you want to get rid of, or your stepson?
Good Lord, you don't think Fred did it?
Do you?
Why, no, of course not.
Okay, supposing Verona did it, then Fred goes up on a perjury rap, maybe accessory.
Oh. Well, I have no overwhelming desire to injure Fred.
Look, why don't you tell me what you have an overwhelming desire for?
Well, under the terms of her mother's will, Eunice will inherit $3 million as soon as she marries.
When?
When what?
When do I meet her?
Be serious, man. Now, I will pay Verona $50,000 in cash if he'll stay away from her.
Would you take $50,000 as the payoff in a $3 million caper?
In this instance, yes. Eunice is not very well, and you may quote me on that. Book, chapter, and verse.
To Johnny Verona?
To Johnny Verona.
Okay. Water's mighty cold this time of the year at the bottom of the bay, but if you don't care, I don't.
Thank you. Let me know how it comes out.
Don't give it a second thought. You'll know. Don't get up, Mr. Cavanaugh. I know the way out.
Hey, Spade, wait up.
Well, you look a little better.
Listen, there's something you ought to know. He was my sister's boyfriend before he married my mother. He did it out of revenge because Eunice threw him over. He still wants to marry her.
Any particular reason?
Oh, my mother put that crazy marriage clause in her will. He's been systematically getting rid of every man who's been interested in her. Bought him off, threatened him off, any way he could. Why? He thinks Eunice will eventually marry him to get her inheritance. But she won't. She'll kill him first, and if she doesn't, I'll do it for her.
Fred.
Oh. Oh, yeah?
Fred, what on earth are you saying? Who is this man?
Well, he's the detective.
Sam Spade. You're Eunice Blair?
Yes, I want to talk to you. Fred, go and...
Yeah. See you later, Spade.
I know why my stepfather hired you, Mr. Spade. If you need the money, go ahead. But this time it won't work.
You look as if you'd like to be a nice girl. How did you happen to settle for a cheap grifter like Johnny Verona?
Because we understand each other, and he can't be scared off.
Any message I can take him from you?
Tell Johnny I'll meet him at the usual place. And tell him I still like my coffee black. No sugar.
Uh-huh. I didn't ask her what kind of sugar she didn't want any of. I thought I knew. The only thing wrong with Sugar Cane's dance was her dancing, but the customers didn't seem to mind, and I didn't either. It was a pleasure to size her up carefully, as I would have felt obliged to do anyway in my professional capacity. She was a black-haired number with aquiline features and widely spaced dark eyes. It was a beautiful combination, and I wondered where I'd seen it before quite recently. I decided to find out.
What's the idea of barging in here after me? Can't you see the sign on the door? No customers in the dressing room.
Then let's go someplace else. I want to talk to you.
Beat it.
Take it easy. This is on business.
Good. I'll fix it up with the boss.
Johnny.
Yeah, Sugar. What's the matter? Is Joe giving you trouble?
He trailed in here after me to cheat Masher on the pretext of discussing business affairs.
Okay, out you go.
Now, wait a minute.
Come on, move.
And don't come back.
Well?
Sorry, I had to give her that bum's rush routine. I don't want to get her excited. She's a nice kid, and she doesn't know why you're here.
I take it you do.
Yeah. Eunice called me and told me you'd be down.
Okay, Johnny, I'll give it to you fast and get out. Clifton Cavanaugh will pay you $50,000 to leave Eunice alone. He also made a few idle or not-so-idle threats about what might happen to her if you don't take his money.
For example?
He said she hasn't been feeling well, might not live long enough to get married. I don't have to tell you what I think about that kind of talk, and I wouldn't be peddling it if my office rent wasn't due. That's why when you started giving me that bum's rush, I made only, shall we say, a token resistance?
Yeah. About me marrying Eunice, you can tell Clifton to stop worrying.
Hmm?
Yeah, Eunice and I got married 3 weeks ago.
You what?
Married. You want to see the papers?
Why the secrecy?
I don't want her to get hurt.
You're scared of Clifton?
Nah. Sugar. She's got a very low boiling point. Pardon me. Yeah. Yeah, Nick. What is? Go ahead. Yeah, I heard you. No, don't touch anything. Don't let anybody in. I'll be right over.
Bad news?
Yeah, Eunice. She's dead.
How?
One of my boys found her in my apartment. She was supposed to wait for me there.
How did it happen?
He's not sure. He thinks she took poison.
I had to give Johnny Verona one thing. He didn't make any pretense about being grief-stricken. But after all, he just inherited $3 million. Sugar Cane took it standing up, too, but she just lost a rival and got her man back $3 million richer. I wasn't with you when you got the news, Mr. Cavanaugh. But the one I really wondered about was Eunice's brother, Fred. What brought that on was something I picked up in Johnny Verona's apartment where we found Eunice's body sprawled out over a tray of coffee things. It was a medicine bottle with a doctor's prescription number on the label. The name of the druggist that had put it up was Pfefferschnau. I remembered what Fred had said to me when he admitted me to your house that afternoon. Quote, "Are you the man from Pfefferschnau's?" I wondered if I'd answered yes, would Eunice still be alive?
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Now, here's important news on good grooming. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. now back to the Sugar Cane Caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
The morning papers didn't carry anything new on Eunice's death. The cause was put down to an overdose of a toxic drug. The doctor who prescribed it said she'd requested it for migraine headaches, which he suggested might have driven her to suicide. He did not explain why she had taken four doses in capsule form and dissolved the rest of it in a decanter of coffee. I thought somebody else had dosed the coffee, and so did you, Mr. Cavanaugh.
Verona did it, of course. He knew she was taking those pills and dosed the coffee just enough to be fatal when added to what she took voluntarily.
You knew all that, too.
Well, so did Fred.
But you had more reasons, 3 million more.
But they were already married.
You know that when you hired me?
Yes.
Then how come?
I knew she was planning to do away with herself. I thought if we could pin it on Verona, after all, he's guilty of that old murder. Fred's a witness to that. Well, if he were convicted, the money would revert to me.
Nuts.
You don't believe me?
She wasn't planning suicide, and you know it.
Well, then?
I don't care who takes the fall, but I got less on Verona than I got on you.
Then I'll give you something. Here. Take a look. Verona's lawyer sent this around before her body was cold. A claim for $3 million, notarized yesterday while Eunice was still alive. Well, Mr. Spade?
Pardon me while I drop dead. You did and waited hopefully, but I managed to stay on my feet. I even managed to make it down the hall to the bar where I found your stepson ambushed behind a row of empty bottles.
Fine detective you turn out to be. I warned you. Stand up like a man. That's all right. I'll take on both of you.
Come on, sober up. Makes sense.
Where's my drink? Who took my glass?
Here it is.
Give me it.
Sure.
You spill it. Ooh, ice on my shirt.
Listen to me. This is very important.
Important?
You were expecting a delivery from a drugstore when I arrived here yesterday morning. Who ordered it?
She did. Eunice, she told me to watch for it and bring it to her.
Did you do that?
No. No, she wasn't here.
What did you do with that bottle of medicine?
I'm sleepy. I gotta get some rest.
Wake up!
No.
I said wake up!
Leave me alone!
Now, listen. You took that bottle with you when you went out. Where did you take it?
I tell you, will you let me go to sleep?
You took that bottle with you, didn't you?
You're guessing. I know you're third degree.
You went to Verona's apartment, didn't you?
Two gentlemen of Verona. Willie Shakespeare.
You doped that coffee, didn't you, with the poison that killed your sister?
I didn't mean it for her. I didn't know she was going there.
Go on talking.
I want a lawyer. I know my rights.
Listen, I'm not a cop. I'm not taking a statement. You're too drunk for it to hold anyway, so you can tell me.
Okay. Here's how it happened. She took her four pills and went to bed.
Yeah?
I sneaked a bottle out of the medicine chest, and I went over to his place. His boy Nick was there making coffee for the boss, he said, when he got home. I hung around talking for a while, and I stripped some of the stuff in the percolator while he was getting out the cups. And that's all.
Why did you want to kill Johnny Verona?
So Eunice wouldn't have to marry him.
What do you mean, have to? Well,
she was doing it for me, so he'd keep quiet.
About that brawl in the club, that old killing they tried to nail Johnny for?
Yeah, that's it. The gun that did it. He got rid of it before the cops arrived. That was my gun.
Fred, straighten up. Look. Johnny dictated the story you told the grand jury. How do I know he didn't dictate the one you're telling me now? Who are you covering for?
I didn't say anything. I didn't tell you anything. Get out of here!
What's the matter with you?
Get out the window!
The revolver barrel that crashed through the darkened window pane behind the bar spoke twice. I answered it. I looked out into the darkness, making myself a good enough target to draw some fire. I fired back at the flashes. I was depending more on luck than aim, and luck was what I wasn't having much of. I went back to the place where Fred had fallen. The shots that had dropped him were luckier. He'd been dead before he hit the floor.
What is it? What's happened here?
See for yourself.
Who?
Shot through the window, couldn't see anything but the gun muzzle. Looked like a .45.
Johnny Verona, he packs a .45.
Who told you that?
It came out of that investigation, one of the reasons they couldn't indict for that old shooting.
There are a lot of reasons they couldn't get that indictment.
What are you driving at?
Neither one of the leading suspects was guilty.
I don't follow you.
Sugar Cane did that job.
Well, that's wild.
What if I told you Fred made a statement to that effect before he was shot?
You're lying. He confessed.
Did I tell you that?
Well, he must have. He always talked about it when he was drunk.
All right. I was bluffing.
Why?
Just a crazy hunch. I thought there might be something between you and Sugar. Now I'm sure there isn't.
Of course not.
Should have spotted it before. You're too much the same type. Even look alike.
I can't make you out.
Well, don't try. It's not worth it. You better call homicide about Fred here. Tell Lieutenant Dundee if he wants my statement, I'll be at my apartment. After I pretended to leave, I came back and did a little eavesdropping of my own. You didn't phone homicide, but you did spend an hour filing out the barrel of a .45 automatic. Then you went out. I tailed you to an address on Sloat Boulevard. A short time after you went in, Sugar Kane came out alone. I followed her to, you know the answer, my apartment. I went in the back way via the fire escape and arrived in time to answer her buzz.
Oh, Mr. Spade, thank heaven I found you at home.
So am I. Come in.
I know it's terribly late.
Forget it. Won't you take off your coat or something?
Can't stay very long. It's not safe. I may have been followed here.
Oh, surely not.
Sam, you don't mind if I call you Sam?
No.
I'm so frightened. It's about Johnny Verona. I don't know what he may do. He's convinced that Fred killed Eunice and he's out gunning for him right now. We've got to stop him before he does anything rash.
You come to the wrong party, Sugar. I'm working for the enemy.
Enemy?
Kavanaugh.
Oh.
It's no skin off his nose if Johnny Verona drops Fred Blair or if you all drop. All he does is sit back and collect.
Oh, he can't be as cynical as that.
You ought to know.
Has he told you anything about me?
I'd rather hear it from you.
May we sit down? Well, there's not much to tell. I played along with Johnny for one reason and one reason alone. To save Fred from that old murder rap.
Were you figuring on marrying into that family, too?
Oh, sir.
A regular pincers movement, wasn't it? Johnny and Eunice, you and Fred.
All right. It's true, I wasn't in love with Fred. But it wasn't all the money. I was sorry for him. Money's not what I really want. I know that now.
What do you want?
Someone. Someone I can trust.
Me too, Sugar.
Oh, Sam, you're what I want. Say you want me too. Please say it. Don't answer it, Sam.
Why not?
Johnny may have followed me here. He's insanely jealous.
Well, I gotta face it out with him sooner or later. Might as well be now.
Sam, be careful.
Stand out of the way, Sugar.
No, Sam. No, no, please.
Don't reach, Johnny.
I'm not gunning for you, Spade.
In that case, come on in.
Well, Sugar, I didn't believe him that you were coming here.
I had to, Johnny. He got some crazy confession out of Fred while he was drunk. I had to stall him until you and Cliff could talk to him. To save Fred, I mean.
Oh, stop horsing around. We all know that we all know Fred is dead, and we all know that we all know who killed him.
Then Cliff was leveling. You are trying to pin that on me.
I don't need it, but if you want it, you can have it.
There's $3 million in my part of it. I'll split down with the middle with you. If you throw in with them, it's a three-way split.
There's no split at all if you take the rap for Eunice's killing, and you will if you throw in with me. It's their word against mine. Two witnesses against one, and all I've got is a confession by a drunk who is now dead.
Sam. Oh, Sam, I was sure for a moment you...
Get away from me.
Sam,
Go on. Go to work on him. I should have given you a little more time. That wasn't fair, was it, Sugar?
I hate you. I hate you both. I never want to see you again.
Get back in that room, Sugar.
Cliff.
What happened, Sugar? Why were you running away?
Johnny double-crossed us. Now Sam knows everything.
What does he know?
The whole caper. Part of it I wasn't quite sure of until I saw you and Sugar standing side by side. That blue-black hair, the same eyes, plus the fact that the bell on Sugar's apartment in Sloat Boulevard reads Kane, parenthesis, Kavanaugh. You took a crazy chance when you knocked off Fred with me right there in the room. The kind of a crazy chance a brother would take to keep his sister clear.
I could have told you that.
It would have helped a lot, Johnny, but you didn't. A man lets his sister go on dancing in a joint like yours after he's in the chips and she goes on liking it, you can be sure they're both playing for big stakes and for nobody but themselves. Where do you think you were supposed to wind up, Johnny? I'll tell you. Drinking that poison coffee that Eunice got hold of by mistake.
That isn't true, Johnny. I never told Fred a thing. He thought you really loved Eunice. I don't know how he found out you were forcing her into that marriage.
Did you also neglect to tell him that he was innocent? That you pulled the trigger in that old killing and shoved a gun into his hand when he was too drunk to know what he was doing?
I've heard enough.
Watch it, Johnny.
No!
I winged you a split second before you fired. Your aim went wild. All I saw at first was that it missed Johnny. Then I saw him move forward in her direction. She was leaning against the wall, a puzzled expression on her face. Her hand plucking nervously at a spot of red that was spreading against the white of her dress. He caught her as she pitched forward and carried her over to a couch. She didn't speak again. You and Johnny knelt beside her until the cops arrived. If you were aware of each other's presence, neither of you showed it. Period. End of report.
That was a sad ending, Sam.
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry it ended so sadly.
Well, it was bound to, one way or the other. There wasn't anybody in the whole gallery that thought about anybody but himself. Except poor Fred, I guess, and his only friends arrived in bottles and left in the ash can.
All those millions and millions. We'll get the money now, Sam.
I'm glad you asked that. It leaves me cold. Go type that up while I knit myself a sweater.
And now, listen to this. It's the smart mother who sees to it that Wild Root Cream Oil is always kept handy around the house. For she knows that Wild Root Cream Oil grooms her family's hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, removes loose dandruff. Get acquainted by asking for the new 25-cent bottle. Also, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too.
Well, here it is, Sam. Goodness, what a terrible group of unfortunates.
Hmm?
As you say, it just had to end badly.
If you hope to get back in my good graces by quoting me, to trick me into agreeing with you, you have succeeded.
Oh, there you go, Sam. So lugubrious.
Effie, what is this? What means lugubrious?
Oh, Sam, it's wonderful. It's my new habit.
Oh?
Every time I read a book now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like you read a book and there's a word you don't know what it means or you're not sure.
Yeah.
Well, I make it a practice now to write down and learn 3 new words per day.
Well.
And learn the definitions to use them in conversation. You know, like desultory.
And lugubrious?
Yes, that's one of my 3 for today.
Mm.
You see? Lugubrious, right? Here it is. Mm-hmm. To talk a great deal. Bucolic, state of being sorrowful. And verbose, to be out in the country.
I see, I see. Very praiseworthy. Enlarging your vocabulary.
Yes,
love it,
I
love
am.
It.
I am. But I don't expect to be really lugubrious for the nonce.
Look, Effie, why don't you go verbose for the weekend? It's the best cure for the bucolic.
Oh, Sam, look what I've done.
What have you done?
I've clipped the wrong definition to the right words.
Well.
For instance, lugubrious, well, it isn't that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And bucolic, oh, let me see. Oh, Sam, I've learned them wrong.
I wasn't going to tell you, Effie. It's better to find out for yourself. It's more efficacious.
My new habit. Oh, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin, with score composed by Renee Garrigan. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to
get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie, keeping all the gals away.
Hiya, Baldy.
Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Shop, you know, next to the Knobby Knit.
Yeah.
And she says they advise their nightmare customers to put a heating pad under the kidney.
Oh.
And instead of milk toast, just a little beef broth and some warm wine. And pine oil.
In the wine?
No, in the broth. I mean the brass. A bath, Sam. Oh, Sam, look at you. Black eyes and scratches. Your lips caught. You didn't go home at all.
I did so.
When you promised me you were going straight home for that much-needed rest, and all the time you knew you were going straight to some sordid bar and get into a brawl. I even bought these things from the sleep shop.
Next door to the knobby net. To Detective Lieutenant Dundee, homicide detail, San Francisco Police.
Medical authorities agree that lost sleep can never be made up.
From Samuel Spade, license number...
137596. Fatigue is cumulative.
Subject, the insomnia caper. Dear Dundee. Honest, Lieutenant. This is how I got into that mess last night, honest. I've been feeling a little rocky for 2 or 3 days. There was nothing much wrong with me, but as my secretary, the ineffable Miss Corrine, said...
Sam, what you need is a good night's sleep.
Which, Lieutenant, is how I happened to be at home, in bed, at 10:30 in the p.m., wearing a sleep shade, earplugs, and quiet pajamas. At 10:45, my right arm went to sleep. I turned over. That's when one of the earplugs fell out. I tore off the sleep shade, dug the plug out of my other ear, stuck my head under the pillow, and was just beginning to drowse off, but... I sat up and lit a cigarette. The city plunged again into the silences of the night. The fog was creeping in on little cat's feet. Then all was peace and quiet again in Post Street. Nothing but the sound of foghorns way out in the bay and the rhythmic throb of the cable car mechanism under the California straight incline. This time, I almost made it, and then... I went over to the window and peered out. The room was on a level with mine in a building just across the alley. I had had occasion to scrutinize said room and its occupant on happier occasions. She was young, red-haired, and also had a nice profile, which I had observed in silhouette against the window blind when she did her nightly setting-up exercises. I now observed that she had a boyfriend, and he seemed to be angry. Not wishing to pry into her affairs, I closed my window. Drew the blind, went back to bed. It was stuffy with the window down, but quieter. I actually fell asleep. I dreamed I was home in bed and somebody was knocking on my door. How true.
Please, open the door, let me in.
Who is it? Evie?
Yes.
Okay. What?
Please, don't be angry. May I come in for a minute?
You're in.
Oh, thank you. I know this seems peculiar, a perfect stranger. I saw you in the window.
That makes us even.
I have the apartment across the alley.
Yeah, I know.
And you saw him. You saw him strike me.
No.
Well, you must have heard.
I heard a lot of stuff breaking.
Well, my ship models, he threw them all over the room, broke them to bits. They weren't especially valuable, and besides, they were presents from him.
So... Ah, now I get it. Now, you came here to tell me all about your collection of ship models. I think that's real neighborly of you, Miss...
Dubar. Doreen Dubar.
Yeah, well, it was nice meeting you. Drop in again sometime, and I'll show you my collection of trout flies.
Please, don't send me away. I'm deathly afraid of him. His name's Dan McCrae. He's a merchant seaman. His boat just got in today. And...
Yeah, but why me?
Well, I've seen you in the window so many times, I somehow felt I knew you. That's foolish, I suppose. I don't even know your name.
Look, sweetheart, if you think you're going to rope me in as a witness to that lover's quarrel...
Oh, please, no. It's more than that. Believe me. I can't tell you everything, but...
Why tell me anything?
Okay, I'm sorry. Pardon me for living. I know it's wrong of me to want to stay alive.
I don't want to be hard-hearted about it, but if you're really afraid of the guy, you ought to go to the cops.
But you don't understand it.
Sorry, are you in there?
Dan.
Dan Badger, no doubt, from the game of the same
name. Open it! Door.
Look, chum, before you say anything, let me put you straight. You picked the wrong sucker.
So you're the guy, huh? The old lady said you were good-looking in a cheap sort of way. Well, I think I'll fix that part of it right now.
Hey, wait a minute.
Oh, so you're going to make it easy for me, huh?
Okay.
No! Dan, what have you done to him?
He'll be all right. Loosen his tie. I'll go get some water.
All right.
Is he coming around? Oh, where'd she go? Hey, Dan, wake up. Come on. Swallow it.
What'd you hit me with? Where's Doreen?
She dissolved. Come on, get up.
Okay, Shepard. This is your round.
Who? Not that it matters, Danny boy, but who?
You're Frank Shepard, ain't you?
You stupid. Can't you read? The name's on the door. Spade. Here's my card.
Huh? A detective. What was she doing here?
Her story was that she was running away from you. Now beat it, will you?
It can't be too fast for me. I'm sorry, Spade. I've been at sea too long, I guess. The old lady over there told me Doreen was seeing the sky every night. Channel fever or something. I blew my top.
Yeah.
No hard feeling, Spade?
Ah, forget it. But when you do catch up with that guy, Shepard, watch your left. You telegraph it. Homicide. Shepard's Paw. A reach. Up to paper. The halls of my Don't answer that, baby. Let it ring. Huh?
Spade, this is Dan McCrae.
Who?
The guy you beat up on.
Look, I just got to sleep. Call back tomorrow. Better yet, don't call.
Listen, you gotta listen to me. I found Shepard. Not much of a fighter. I marked him up a little anyhow just to scare him.
Go on back to the bar. Have one for me.
Listen, I'm okay now. I sobered up like a shot. I only came back here to phone.
Makes sense, will you?
When I got back to the ship, he was there in my cabin.
What?
He's dead.
Who? Shepard?
Yeah, he's dead.
Hit him too hard?
I don't think so, but I've got to know. You're a detective. Now, look, I haven't got much money, but...
Then start earning some. This is going to cost you. Hello, Dan.
Well, you got here quick.
I'm a real fast sleepwalker. This the ship?
Yeah. Come on, I'll take you aboard.
Give me the rundown. Shepard took your girl while you were away at sea. You slapped her around a little, broke her toy boats, and generally behaved like a bad boy. We'll skip that little exhibition match in my apartment. Then what?
Come on, up this ladder. About those ship models. One was missing. She acted funny about it, and guess where it was? In Shepard's hotel room.
Yeah?
The Boston Hotel up on Broadway. Crumb dump. I shook the address out of that old lady.
Never mind that now. So you went there, went up to his room, worked him over.
But he was alive when I left there, that's clear. Then I had drinks in a lot of different places. I think I was in some other fight.
Yeah, you're lucky.
I don't know who with, just faces, a lot of blurs. I don't even know where all I went. Then I don't remember anything till I'm in an all-night beanery down here on the Embarcadero and a cab driver's holding me up on the stool pouring coffee to me. Then I came aboard.
Yeah?
Come on in my cabin. I'll show you.
There were a few bruises and ring marks on the face, but they'd been cleaned up and smeared with methylate. I know you're not supposed to touch anything until homicide gets there, Lieutenant, but this one had obviously already been tampered with, so I didn't think you'd mind if I rolled him over just enough to peek at the back of his head. There was a tiny cut on his scalp near the base of the skull, not more than a quarter of an inch long. It had hardly bled. I frisked the pockets. In his wallet, $38, identification card, Frank R. Shepard, Boston Hotel, San Francisco, and a snapshot of Doreen sailing a model Chinese junk in a pond someplace. In his cigar case, cigars. Around his middle, a tooled leather belt with hammered silver buckle. It was a popular type Hickok belt, but something about the buckle didn't quite figure. The prong of the silver buckle wasn't silver. It was tempered steel. And instead of being pointed, the end was flattened out and ground to a sharp cutting edge. There were two notches on either side of it that didn't look like they'd been put there for decoration. I took the belt off, rolled it up, and put it in my coat pocket.
Well, what do you make of it?
You touch it?
No. Why?
A man falls forward, not back. The cops will say he was killed someplace else and brought here.
Then I'm in the clear.
Yeah, unless they form a theory that you brought the body down here to dispose of it.
Then why didn't I?
Maybe you lost your nerve. Maybe you sobered up.
How? What killed him?
I don't know. Maybe internal injuries, maybe a head injury, or both from that beating you gave him. Maybe he just dropped dead, heart attack. That's for the police medical examiner to find out.
You mean you're going to call the police?
I have to.
But I called you to... I thought you could clear me before...
Now, wait a minute. You told me yourself you drew a blank. You don't know where you were or what you were doing.
What are you going to do?
Call the police.
No, wait. Yeah, I suppose you have to.
I do.
You first.
Yeah. I must say you're taking it pretty well. I had a small dream. Abstractions, you know. Cubes and circles. Nothing worth describing. But after I'd given homicide the rumble and crawled home to my own trundle, I did better. I dreamed I was Wild Bill Hickok, the belt tycoon. I was working on a promotion scheme for a new combination belt buckle, toothpick, and murder weapon. Sam Spade, Sleepyhead.
The United States Armed Forces Radio Service is presenting the weekly adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
Nuts.
Sam?
Unique garage, Harry speaking.
Yeah. Dundee, Sam.
Okay, Lieutenant, you got me. What time is it?
It's 3:10.
Any sign of dangerous Dan McCrae, that rat, my client?
Not a whiff. Hey, about that girl, Sam. Dubar, Doreen L., Balboa Apartment, Sutter Street. Can
yeah.
you give me that description again?
Go over and take a look at her.
I'm in her apartment now. She says she never heard of you and she doesn't know anybody named Dan McCrae. And she says she only went out once tonight to a drugstore to get some batteries for her hearing aid and some elastic stocking.
All right, Dundee. If you want to swallow a pack of lies, all right.
Check the drugstore and she's wearing them now. I bring her over there, Sam, but she's a little feeble.
Okay, Dundee. I'll be right over. Hello, Dundee.
Come in, Sam. I want you to make sure, Sam, this is the apartment.
Yeah. That's my window just opposite. You can see the bed that I just got out of to come over here in response to your untimely call.
Will you come in here, Miss Dubar?
Certainly, Lieutenant. I'm very anxious to make that man's acquaintance.
She was about 65 years old with a pleasant motherly face, gold-rimmed bifocals, hearing aid, and snow-white hair. Over her shoulder, I could see into the kitchen. Sitting at a table facing away from me was an old man. In front of him on the bench were three ship models in various stages of disrepair. Broken masts, rudders, and with a mallet and a tiny chisel, he was shaping a piece of wood. I guessed that it was a broken spar from one of the hulls.
Well, Sam, still say this is the same apartment?
Yeah. Same apartment, different people.
But you must be mistaken, young man. My brother and I have lived in this same apartment for nearly 20 years.
She's lying, Dundee. Have you checked the janitor, the building manager, anybody?
Janitor says she's been living here since he took the job in 41. We're trying to locate the building manager now. According to your story, Sam, the girl and McCrae had a big row in here. Busted up a lot of furniture stuff. I don't see any sign of it.
They could have cleaned it up.
It doesn't make sense, Sam.
Okay, I dreamed the whole thing, but those ship models, I didn't dream them. McCrae mentioned them, the girl mentioned them. Busted ship models. There they are on the table in the kitchen.
Thank goodness. What seems to be the trouble now, Dory? Just why is this young man so excited about my models?
I declare, Ben, I can't make head or tail of it. Something about a girl with the same name as mine and a young man, I forget his name, who seems to have killed somebody named Shepard, I believe it was.
What was it about the ship models, young man? Dory, could it be the girl who brought these over to me to repair? What was her name?
It's just on the tip of my tongue. Who did she say sent her then? Wasn't that Shepard?
Well, no,
With all due respect to your age, nuts!
I'm getting out of here, Dundee, while I can still remember my own name. I gotta get some sleep. Hey, wake up.
Oh, Sam.
Get out of my bed.
I'm sorry. I was beat. I didn't know where else to go.
You can go to jail. Their beds don't have inner springs, but it's a free flop.
Listen, I had to make that break. It would have been a murder rap for sure.
You mean your memory came back?
I had a funny feeling I'd seen that guy Shepard somewhere before. And just before I slugged you while we were standing there in the companionway, it came back to me. That guy Shepard, he came aboard ship yesterday when we docked. He flashed a badge on the gangway watch and asked to see the ship's carpenter.
The one that made those ship models for you?
Yeah, yeah. But don't you see? Manslaughter is one thing, cop killing is another.
This ship's carpenter, what's he look like?
Oh, thin, around 65. Lame. Talks like a Swede.
City morgue.
Maxie, Sam Spade. That stiff-tagged Shepard?
Shepard, yes, Sam. Just got him back. I think it's all there. Those autopsy boys. Careless.
What killed him, Maxie?
Puncture wound. Base of the skull. Small, sharp instrument.
Anything new on his ID?
Well, Shepard seems to be a phony handle, Sam, but it'll have to do till Reveal comes along. Sergeant Pullhouse let it drop that the boys at his hotel thought he was a detective.
Uh-huh.
The funny thing about Sheppy boy, Sam, no belt, no suspenders, very loose trousers. How'd he keep them up?
By the time I got to him, it didn't matter.
Hey, I figured he wore a belt, and somebody swiped it off him.
That's an interesting theory, Maxie. I'll see what I can do with it. I tucked Danny Boy back into my bed, locked him in, and gumshoed around the block to the Balboa apartment. Just to be mean, I woke up the janitor and checked his statement on the old couple in Doreen's apartment. He worked three buildings, was sure of the old woman, but backed down a little on the man, which is what I expected. Was sure of the floor, but not of the apartment number, didn't know any tenants by name, which goes to show, Lieutenant, what police statements are sometimes worth. I thanked him, stole his passkey, and went upstairs. I didn't expect to find anybody home in Doreen's apartment. I was half right. Sven, the old carpenter, was sitting in a chair, staring straight ahead of him. He looked as though he were in a daze. I walked over to him. Even close up, he didn't look dead. But he was. Body still warm, no visible wounds. But he was wearing a tooled leather belt with a hammered silver buckle. The prong of the buckle was tempered steel and had the same peculiar shape as the one in my pocket, the one I had taken off of Shepard's body. The ship models were gone. What was left of them I found in the fireplace. And in the charred remnants of what had once been the hull of a toy Chinese junk, I found something that hadn't burned. It was a small metal cylinder with two pins projecting from it on either side, about the middle of it. It looked like a miniature lock mechanism, which it was exactly. The key, you guessed it, was the prong of that belt buckle. The cylinder was empty, except for a few white grains that looked like sugar. I tasted them. It was not sugar, but in the dope traffic, they sometimes call it that. About then, I heard footsteps outside in the hall. I ducked into the closet, leaving the door cracked enough to see out.
Stand over there, Doreen. Don't try anything. I won't shoot you unless I'm forced to.
No. You didn't shoot Fred Frank Shepard, did you?
Don't ever mention that name again.
All right.
Well, Sven, don't just sit there staring. We've just time to catch the boat. Ben, answer me.
I don't think he can answer you, Mrs. Brownrigg.
Oh, what are you talking about? Sven! Sven! He's dead. He's dead!
Oh, careful, she's got a gun.
Hand it over. Hand it over, Grandma. You won't need it anymore.
You killed him!
Yes, I'm a desperate character. Hand it over.
Come and get it. It should be easy for you. Such a strong young man, and I'm such a weak old woman.
Now, look, you don't have your glasses on, and this .45 is too heavy for an elderly tripe criminal. Now, sit down and keep quiet.
Oh, Sam, I thought you'd forgotten all about me.
I've been trying to all night. Where were you?
They locked me in a closet in her apartment.
Next door?
They were going to take me with them, get rid of me on the boat. After what they did to Frank, they had to get out fast.
Shepard. Who was Shepard, anyway?
I can't tell you that.
He was a federal narcotics agent, wasn't he?
How did you know?
You just told me. Now tell me the rest of it.
Well, honestly, I didn't know anything about it till about a month ago. I was dusting the ship models and knocked one off the shelf. It broke and something spilled out of it. Mrs. Brownrigg was here when it happened. She rushed for it and ran out of the room with it. She said she'd take it and get it repaired for me. And then this girlfriend of mine came by while I was sweeping the white powder up. She's a nurse. She tasted it, told me it was dope. Well, I didn't want to do anything till I talked to Danny, but she reported it. And that's when Frank Shepard came to see me from the narcotics squad.
He told you to play along with them?
Yes. They arrested the man Mrs. Brownrigg was selling it to, and Shepard told her he was taking the man's place so he could spy and get evidence, you see. She believed him because of the belt.
This the belt?
Yes. That thing on the belt, it's really a little key that fits in a little...
Yeah. Now that fits in a little lock that releases the little mechanism that makes the false bottom fall out of a little boat. When did she find out that Shepard was a narcotics agent?
I didn't. I saw them together so much that I began to think they might double-cross me. Then I thought about that sailor, Dan, that roughneck boyfriend of hers. So I went to Dan and told him I thought his girl had taken up with Shepard while he was away at sea.
And I had to let Dan think the worst because I was sworn to secrecy. But Dan's so violent and jealous, he said he'd kill Shepard, so I came to you.
Yeah.
You were a witness that Dan hit me, and I thought we might have him arrested so nobody else would get hurt. But I guess you were too sleepy to care.
What? Sorry. I must have dropped off. Asleep. Period. End of report.
But, Sam...
Yes, Angel?
Didn't you arrest that terrible old Mrs. Earwig?
Brownrigg, Effie?
Wasn't it Brownrigg, Sam?
One of her aliases, no doubt. In reply to your previous question, yes.
Who killed Mr. Shepard, Sam? And how?
Look, Eff, you'll recall that Sven was shaping a piece of wood with a small chisel and a mallet. The fatal wound, you recall.
Oh, and who killed Sven?
Sit down. I want to have a serious talk with you.
Oh.
Now, over here.
Yes, Sam.
Stop twisting your handkerchief.
Yes, Sam.
Effie, sometimes I think you've been a detective secretary too long. Warps the outlook.
Sam, are you trying to tell me that my services are no longer required?
You see, that's what I mean. You jumped to conclusions, as in the instance of the death of Sven.
I only asked who killed him, Sam.
Exactly. Did it ever occur to you that some people, especially old, feeble people, just die?
Yes.
Quietly? Sitting in a chair sometimes?
Yes.
Sometimes in bed in their sleep?
That'll never happen to you, Sam.
Check. But it did happen to Sven. Perhaps the excitement of his criminous activities, fear of discovery, his impending flight were too much for his heart. On the other hand, it might have just been old age.
Of course.
The point is, Effie, it does happen.
Yes.
Never in detective stories, only in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's all. Good night.
Sam, you're not sleepy.
Nevertheless, I'm going home to bed.
Oh. Well, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Crime Solvers for the adventures of Sam Spade, Private Detective. We bring new episodes every Sunday at noon Eastern Time and Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Until our next show, everyone, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.